It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. Today is Wednesday, March 20th. I'm Erin Fulton with Raven News. The Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery goes on two-hour notice this morning at 8 a.m. That means a fishery could be opened at any time by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with 2 hours' notice to commercial fishermen. This year, the guideline harvest level for the fishery is the highest in history at 81,000 tons, 20% of the department's forecast for the mature herring population, also known as biomass. But a limited market and lower industry participation means the commercial fishery won't meet the guideline harvest level. Last year, the fishery harvested around 11,000 tons, just one-third of what the state allowed. According to a Fish and Game press release, one test set conducted on Monday afternoon in the Mountain Point area yielded fish weighing 149 grams on average, with just over 9% mature roe. ADF&G conducted aerial surveys over the weekend, and while they observed no spawn, herring were spotted on March 16th near Low Island. ADF&G's research vessel, the Kestrel, will arrive in Sitka this morning. Sitka legislators were among the 39 lawmakers who voted to override the governor's veto of a major education bill on Tuesday. The override attempt failed by one vote, leaving legislators deeply concerned over the future of school funding. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Back in February, Senate Bill 140 passed the legislature by a near unanimous vote, the first significant bipartisan legislation to pass in recent memory. Representative Rebecca Himshute is an independent. She's still reeling from Governor Dunleavy's veto.
My heart is just breaking in this situation because there was so much good and so much effort that went into SB 140. It really kind of represented the best of what we can do in Juneau, and to have that unilaterally crushed is hard.
Himshute is a career educator who spent many years teaching at Kikuchihin Elementary in Sitka. Senate Bill 140 would have increased per-pupil funding for public schools, the base student allocation, for the first time in 8 years. She's not sure why Republicans who voted for the education bill the first time then defected on the override vote. Himshute doesn't think the legislature will go back to the drawing board.
And I'm going to be fairly blunt with you right now. It is very hard to rally energy to dive back into a conversation on education. And I'm passionate about education. I think folks who know me know that it's kind of the center of my universe. And I'm struggling to find energy to have more conversations about it. So all of that to say there are still options out there. There are still things we can do.
One of those options is a one-time allocation similar to last year. However, there's little certainty in it. Last year, the legislature agreed to give school districts an additional $680 per pupil, but the governor vetoed half of it. Himshute says Senate Bill 140 really was our best option. Senator Bert Stedman of Sitka also voted to override. Stedman, like the governor, is a Republican, but he's never been a fan of the brinkmanship that takes place in the Capitol. He said that SB 140 started as a way to bring better internet to Alaska's rural schools. Now that, plus all other elements of the bill, have been shot down with the veto. He called it collateral damage. He told the Alaska Beacon, "I find it distasteful, extremely distasteful, that the rural children of our state are virtually held hostage over our squabbling with the base student allocation." Representative Rebecca Himshute says there is an upside. It's not happening in a last-minute rush or in a special session when legislators are heading for the door. If there's any good news in this situation, she said, it's the fact that we do still have half this session to go. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Sitka school board members and administrators will join KCAW News for a one-hour forum on school funding in the aftermath of the veto, beginning at 6:30 p.m. tonight. Please email your questions in advance to news@kcaw.org. The possibility of parole offers hope to people serving long prison sentences for serious crime, but it's more and more difficult for Alaska prisoners to win discretionary parole. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, advocates and parolees went to the state capitol to make the case that the parole board is considering the wrong factors.
In the summer of 2020, Sylvester Byrd Jr. was sitting in a hallway with other inmates at Wildwood Correctional Complex in Kenai, agonizing over what his next years would look like. One after another, his fellow inmates got the news. They would not be leaving prison anytime soon. And pretty soon, it would be his turn.
It is a terrifying experience.
That's Byrd telling his story to the Senate State Affairs Committee. Byrd was serving time for first-degree murder for shooting a driver in Midtown Anchorage 25 years earlier. And on that day in Wildwood, each of the inmates were up for discretionary parole. That's a chance to be released from prison based on their record and their plans for reintegration into society. About a third of felony offenders in Alaska's prisons are eligible, and some can go up for parole after serving a quarter or a third of their sentences. It's distinct from mandatory parole, which is much more common, but only after inmates have served most of their time. That day in Wildwood, one by one, the Alaska State Board of Parole told the prisoners no, they had not met the criteria for release. Then Sylvester Byrd got his answer. He would be released the following May.
I remember that day so vividly that when they granted me parole, I was stunned. It was my PO that tapped me and was like, "You got it." And I literally was like, "Oh my God."
He was one of just 60 people granted discretionary parole that year. Five times as many had their parole decisions put on hold or denied. Since 2018, far more Alaska inmates have been denied discretionary parole than granted it. That's a reversal from as recently as 2016, when more than 60% of applications were granted. The chair of the parole board, Letone Tupo, told the committee that board members consider a variety of factors when deciding whether to grant discretionary parole. One of the four factors outlined in state law is whether releasing the inmate on parole would, quote, diminish the seriousness of the crime. And Tupo says that criterion weighs heavily on the board.
The nature of the offense itself, in associated with the degree of the offense, determined the seriousness of the offense.
Megan Edge, director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska's Prison Project, told the committee that's not something that should be up to the parole board to decide.
The parole board, appointed by the executive branch, does not have sentencing authority. But when it denies parole because of the seriousness of the crime, they are effectively resentencing the person before them.
Edge says it's a common justification for denying parole, though official statistics can't confirm that. A Department of Corrections spokesperson says the state doesn't track it. But Edge argues it's not the board's job to look at what happened before the inmate was sent to prison. Its role is to assess whether someone is likely to break the law again if released.
It's the job of corrections to rehabilitate. And when corrections is able to accomplish this, then the board must acknowledge the sentence from the court and the work of the team of people who make people with felony convictions healthier, more well-functioning, safer members of our communities.
Edge wants to eliminate the board's power to deny parole based on the seriousness of the crime. A bill backed by the ACLU and sponsored by Anchorage Democratic Senator Lukey Tobin would add two members to the parole board. It would designate some seats for physicians, a tribal member, an addiction counselor, someone with a felony conviction, and a representative of crime victims. No more than three members could be current or former corrections employees. Tobin spoke in favor of the bill.
All crimes are serious. But what is really critical is that parole is used to help folks understand that there is hope at the end of the conversation. That as they are incarcerated, there is a reason to be on good behavior. There's a reason to think about what comes next. There's a reason to plan for a life after incarceration.
The proposal was well received at the hearing, but a few days later, former legislator Ralph Samuel sent a three-page letter to the committee, first reported by the political blog Alaska Landmine. Samuels argues that removing the seriousness of the crime criterion would violate the Victims' Rights Amendment. That 1994 constitutional amendment changed the stated purpose of Alaska's criminal justice system to include, quote, community condemnation of the offender. Samuel's brother was murdered in 1989. Byrd, the former Wildwood inmate who won parole, listed Dwayne Samuel's killer as a good candidate for discretionary parole. Ralph Samuels called that, quote, the most insulting thing I have ever heard. Senator Scott Kawasaki, a Fairbanks Democrat who chairs the State Affairs Committee, said after the hearing he plans to advance the bill, but it's not clear if it has enough support to make it through the House and Senate before the end of this year's legislative session. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Around 100 people faced the Alaska Capitol Monday night, chanting in support of a ceasefire in Gaza and in opposition of Governor Mike Dunleavy's proposed bill that would crack down on unpermitted street protests in Alaska.
Ceasefire now! Ceasefire now! Ceasefire now!
Speaking through a megaphone, Salim Theo Hook says Dunleavy's bill is an attack on First Amendment rights for Alaskans.
We have a right to protest, and he's trying to take that away. This bill is wrong, it shouldn't exist, and that's why we say, respect the right to protest!
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 The governor's bill, introduced last month, would criminalize unpermitted street protesting and other actions that block highways and access to public places. If passed, the bill would create a new misdemeanor crime called obstruction of free passage in public places. It carries a maximum penalty of up to a year in prison and a $25,000 fine. On Monday night, the ralliers chanted for lawmakers to take action against the bill's passing and to publicly call for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. Juno for Palestine organizer Sonia Kumar says the group has been meeting with Juno's delegation and others in the state about the war between Israel and Hamas. She says the group will continue rallying to raise awareness on both topics.
I think it's really important for people to learn about things like this. And I mean, chanting at the building isn't really going to do that, but I think it's hopefully bringing more awareness to it and showing people that Juno does care.
Local resolutions calling for a Gaza ceasefire have been considered by a few cities across Alaska, but no legislation has been introduced at the state level. The House Transportation Committee heard Dunleavy's bill on unpermitted street protests on Tuesday afternoon. I'm Erin Fulton, and this has been Raven News.